too. But the only thing that's more frightening than a lack of God's, than having God's Spirit, is a lack of God's Spirit. Holy Spirit, come. We've been looking at John's apocalypse, which is actually Jesus's apocalypse. And what apocalypse means is a revealing. It's an opening up. Something that was shut is being opened. Now you don't see it, now you do. The curtains are drawn back. It's the unveiling of Jesus Christ. In chapter 1, if you remember back to then, Jesus is unveiled as one like a Son of Man, standing in the holy place in heaven. Do you remember it? Anyone who was here? And that's the real holy place, not the copy which God told Moses to make in the wilderness. In chapter 5, Jesus is declared to be the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, that is the Messiah, but appears as a lamb standing in the middle of God's throne, looking as though he has been slain. It's a revelation of who Jesus Christ is. Only Jesus is worthy to break the seven seals of God's scroll. And then you think, well, what's God's scroll all about? Well, I don't know. But we see what happens when the seals are broken. The writers of the apocalypse bring conquest, war, poverty, and death. Those killed because of their witness call out loudly for God to avenge their blood. So, as part of that process, God's faithful are killed. It's not the scripts that we usually hear, where God's faithful are preserved, that they're killed. And those killed because of their witness appear again under God's throne, and they call out for God to avenge their blood. Remember how Abel's blood called out for vengeance from the earth? The blood of the righteous Abel? This is followed by cosmic upheaval and dreadful anticipation of the great day of anger of the one seated upon the throne and the Lamb. And that's Judgment Day. An angel or messenger from the east seals the servants of God upon their foreheads. And the seal is a tove, which happens to be a cross. If you look at the ancient form of the Hebrew alphabet, the letter T, Tav, is like that. The number sealed from Israel is 144,000. Which, any maths teachers here? What? How many 12s are in 144,000? Yeah, so it's 12,000 from each of 12 tribes. One of them's left out. One of the tribes. Dan's left out. Don't know why. Maybe Judas Iscariot was from Dan. Don't know. There's also a huge number from every tribe, every nation, every people, and every tongue, who call out, shout out, that salvation belongs to God and the Lamb. That's their message. The Lamb is their shepherd and guides them to springs of living water. Does that ring any bells? 23rd Psalm. And he wipes the tears from their eyes. the seventh seal, so there are seven seals that get broken, but the seventh seal is another seven, and it's a cycle of seven trumpets. Each one brings calamity. So number one, hail, fire and blood is thrown to the earth and burns a third of the earth, a third of the trees and all of the green grass. Number two is a burning mountain thrown into the sea and it kills a third of the sea. So it becomes like blood. Where's that happened before? Yeah. And the third one is a star named Wormwood, which is bitterness. In Russian, it's Chernobyl. And that falls from heaven and poisons a third of the earth's fresh water. Number four is the sun, moon and stars are struck and a third of their light becomes dark. Sounds very much like Joel's prophecy, where he talks about the sun becoming dark and the sky becomes like sackcloth and the moon goes red. But when Peter talks about that, he talks about the coming of the Holy Spirit and he says this is what Joel was talking about. And it talks about God's Spirit being poured out on young and old. And in fact, it talks about male and female, but you have to get into the language to see that. That it's not saying male, it's using more of an open thing. And that's what Peter talked at Pentecost, what he talked about at Pentecost. God's Spirit came. And number five is a fallen star called Abaddon in Hebrew and Apollyon in Greek. And that means no Hebrew or Greek? I wouldn't have known, but John tells you what it means. It means destroyer. It's interesting he gives it to you in Hebrew and Greek. People wonder who wrote John. I reckon John wrote John. And that would, and it's not great Greek. It's good. It's better than anything I could do. But it's got Hebrew patterns in it. And every now and then it breaks into Hebrew. So it's a perfect fit for someone whose first language was Aramaic and who used to operate in a Greek context, probably in Ephesus at this point, which was the second biggest Roman city in the empire at the time. And it was a bit like Perth. It was a frontier town and it was the meeting place of the East and the West. So the Roman Empire, the Latin-speaking part was off to the west of there, but the East was the Greek-speaking part and Ephesus was right in the middle. Trade went through there. It was a happening place. And number six... Oh, sorry. Number five is a fallen star who opens the abyss, and the abyss is a big, big, deep place, to release a plague which torments everyone who doesn't have God's seal on their forehead. Then number six is four destroying angels are released to kill a third of all people. There are 20,000 10,000s. Any mathematicians who can work out that number? 200 million is right. Troops and cavalry. Do you reckon you could raise an army like that in the Roman Empire? No, because there were 50 million, so it's more people than were in the entire empire. Could you do it today? Then a great messenger comes down from heaven holding a book. It is sweet to taste but turns sour in the stomach. With it comes a command to prophesy about many peoples, nations, tongues and kings. John is told to measure God's temple. The outside is given to the nations to trample. Now this is the goy. So when John says nations, he's saying ethnics. He's saying foreigners. And it's not a big step to dogs. The goy, you know, they're the outsiders. So the outside of God's place is given to the nations to trample for 1,260 days, and that's 42 months. During this time, God's two prophets, who are like Moses and Elijah, prophesy in sackcloth. So that's associated with mourning. They have power, but in the end, a beast from the abyss, here it is again, makes war with them and kills them. So it's not the ending you expect. It's not the makes war with them and is defeated. No, makes war with them and wins. Their dead bodies are left in the street for half a week. That's 3.5 days. And those who remain party and give each other presents because of them. And everyone sees it, it says. But after 3.5 days, a breath of life from God enters them and they stand up, terrifying everyone who's just been sending the presents. They're called up to heaven and then there is a great earthquake. Finally, those terrified who remain begin to give God the glory. Upon the seventh trumpet being blown, the beginning of God's reign on earth is proclaimed. And this is what John says, the kingdom of earth has become the kingdom of God, and he shall reign forever and ever. Is that familiar to anyone? He shall reign forever and ever. Revelation's full of lines that end up in our Christian music. And it also sounds a bit like your kingdom come, your will be done in earth as it is in heaven. And that brings us to chapter 12. And a great portent appeared in heaven. A portent, a big sign. So John's seeing all of this. This is what God shows him. A woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was with child and she cried out in her pangs of birth, in anguish for delivery. And another portent appeared in heaven. Look, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. And 7 crowns upon his heads. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to bear a child so that he could eat the child when she gave birth. She brought forth a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God in which to be nourished for 1,260 days. Any guesses who the woman is? Mary, yes. Israel, yes. Yes, in Joseph's dream, the 12 who bowed down to. He talks about 12 stars and they end up bowing down to him or something like that. What about the red dragon? Rome? I think it is what generates Rome, according to John. The red dragon. He's a serpent. Yeah, it's Satan. The 3.5 years are there again, and it's a time when the woman must be nourished in the wilderness. So they're good so far, I think, what you've said, that the woman is Mary, yes, but also Israel, and there's a bit more on who the woman is to come. But this woman has to be fed in the wilderness. Does that ring any bells? Manna in the desert. So how's Israel going to survive in the desert when there's no food out there? And they go there because of their lack of faith. What happens? What's going to happen? They're all saying, we haven't got any food, Moses. And then God feeds them. For 40 years he feeds them somehow. Well, this time's going to be like that. It's out in the desert and they're going to be fed by God. Only God is able to supply, as he did with the Israelites in the wilderness. And so now we're back into Revelation. This is chapter 12, verse 7. Now war arose in heaven. Michael, that's the archangel Michael, and his angels fighting against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought, but they were defeated. And there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down. And here it is, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan. So there we go. The deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And that's what Satan means. He's the, what do they call the lawyer who wants you in jail? The prosecutor. Yeah. He's the guy who always says, you know, you're no good. The adversary. Yeah. Yeah. So it's in court. The one who's with us, the paraclete, is Jesus. Yes, he's our defence. And there's a guy standing here who's our accuser. And he accuses us day and night before God. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. So here it is again. You can end up dead. Rejoice then, O heaven, and you that dwell therein, but woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great anger, because he knows his time is short. This is a succinct summary of the seals and trumpets. John's summary is much shorter than mine, and better. One question, though, when is this going to happen? Or, when did this happen? Or, is this happening now? So what do you think? Is there anything in the New Testament that sounds like this? Besides in Revelation? And when did he say that? It was as he entered Jerusalem, going, he knew, to his death. So that song we had this morning is a perfect fit for this. See, Revelation has the gospel encrypted in it. It is encrypted. It's hidden in there. You have to unpack it. And you have to know Matthew's gospel to know, ah, this is talking about that. And it's interesting that John does seem to know John's gospel. You get bits that sound like his gospel, but you also get bits like this that sound like Matthew's gospel. So do you think it's happening back then, or is it going to happen in the future, or is it happening now? I'm going to make you vote. Who thinks it happened back then? Hands up. You have to put your hand up once. Oh, all right. All of the, that's always a safe bet. All right. I think that's good. All of the above. Now, people have a lot of trouble with Revelation because we want to make it somewhere in the past or somewhere in the future or now. And they've even got names for those interpretations of Revelation. So anyone who's done it at, what is it? Premillennialism and stuff like that and preterite interpretation and historicist interpretation. You'll see it in all the commentaries on Revelation, and it's ones that say it happened in the past, there's ones that saying it's going to happen in the future, and there's ones that say it's happening now. The interesting thing is, if you go on YouTube and type in PBS relativity, PBS is public broadcasting in the US, there's this great 9-minute or 12-minute spiel on Einstein's theory of relativity, thank you, which I really recommend that you watch, because he says in that that the one thing that's constant in Einstein's maths, well, it's not Einstein's, but it's what Einstein is famous for, is fitting the maths to what you actually observe. The thing that's constant is something that includes space and time. Not just time. The thing that is invariant, which physicists like, is space and time combined. So if you leave space out or time out, it's not the reality. And one thing about this is there's no such thing as simultaneity. What's happening now for me isn't what's happening now for you if you're moving relative to me or if you're in a different gravitational field. So you can see something go bing, bing, but I can see it go bing, bing the other way around, depending on where I am and how I am. And the funny thing is, this fits that. And one of the things that this scientist says is that it's like the beginning and the end and everything in between are one thing. So go and watch that if you want an explanation of this. PBS, yes, and relativity, and it's on YouTube. And if you, it'll be about 9 or 12 minutes if it's the right one. It's just one guy speaking. It's really good. Right. Where was I up to? Right. When the dragon saw he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had borne the male child. But the woman was given two wings of the great eagle. that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness. What's that? Two wings of the great eagle. No one know? Hazard a guess? Yes? Yep. Yeah. Yep. Maybe. It can mean all kinds of things. Rome, its emblem was the eagle, and it had an east and a west. And the woman was given that. So if you read it that way, it means that the woman was given the Roman Empire. And that's what happened. Constantine said, oh, you can be Christians now. And by the way, I'm going to be one too. Because his mum was a Christian. And by then, I think the entire empire had got to the point where they couldn't make war with the Christians anymore. Because of there were more of them than us. And no, I don't think so. Not when it became official.
And when you read it like that, that she gets the wings and she gets away from the dragon, that sounds like she's won.
It does. It does. But there's also the Rome that is Rome that makes war against her. I don't know. Anyway, we'll keep on. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with the flood. Anyone know what that means? I don't have any idea what that means. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon had poured from his mouth. Then the dragon was angry with the woman and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring. So here's another hint about who the woman is. The rest of her offspring are those who keep the commandments of God and bear testimony to Jesus. So the dragon starts by making war on God. After being defeated and cast down to earth, he chases the woman. Then she's whisked away into the desert, again it seems, for 3.5 years. Then the dragon makes war with the rest of the woman's offspring. Now we're given the key to understand what it means. The woman's offspring are those who keep God's commandments and bear testimony to Jesus. This reminds me of what in the Gospels? It reminds me of when Jesus said, this is my mother, and this is my brother, and this is my sister. People who obey what God says. So now we're up to chapter 13. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns upon its heads, and a blasphemous name on each of its heads. Tell me a blasphemous name on one of these heads. What springs to mind? Anything? Yeah. And they started to call themselves God. They wanted people to address them as my Lord and my God. Yes? Grandiosity, yes, indeed. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's feet. Its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it, the dragon, who is, we now know, Satan, gave his power and his throne and great authority. Satan's throne, Jesus mentioned earlier in Revelation, I think it's where Satan has his throne, is Ephesus. I think it's one of those 7 places that Jesus talks about. One of its heads seems to have a mortal wound, so it's It's got some kind of wound that should have left it dead. But its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth followed the beast with wonder. Men worshipped the dragon, that's the devil, because he had given his authority to the beast. So this means they were going, gee, the devil's great because he's given his power to this beast thing. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who's like the beast? Who can fight against it? And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words. So this generalized beast was given a single mouth that uttered haughty and blasphemous things, just like I think you nailed before. And it was allowed to exercise authority for, guess how long? 42 months. There it is again. So John wants you to remember this, because he's saying it over and over again. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies of God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, which is heaven. That is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given to it over every tribe and people and tongue and nation. So it rules everything, the entire world. And all who dwell on earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb that was slain. If anyone can hear, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity he will go. If anyone is to be slain with the sword, by the sword he must be slain. Here is a call for endurance and faith and trust on the part of the saints. So it gets so bad that you're put in prison and you're executed, because that was the mode of execution in Rome. If you were a Roman citizen, you'd get your head chopped off. Here's a call for endurance, so you have to go through it, and faith, because you're going to be sitting there in jail thinking, is it worth it? You know, they're going to execute me, or, you know, whatever the alternative is at the time. Right, many think that this great and terrible beast refers to Rome. The seven heads fits with seven Caesars that had been up until the time of John, depending on how you count. The seventh one is Nero. The beast is a mashup of leopard, bear, and lion. So tell me about a leopard. Sorry, I missed it. Spots. No. Leopard. Fast. Bear. Powerful. Lion. Ferocious. Has anyone seen a lion close up? You know, seeing its jaws and thinking my head would fit just nicely in, just as it crushes it. Wow. Wish I'd looked at your Bible. Well, I'd say that's better. Absolutely. And John's always harking back to Daniel. Always. Yeah. And it does. It inherited from all of those. Yeah. And it is a gang up. It's all of those things. The other thing is, remember at the beginning in heaven, in chapter 4, there's the four. There's the oxen and the human and the eagle. And what was the fourth? But they represent the best of everything in terms of ability. So I forgot the fourth one. It's a lion. So this is like the heavenly thing, but it's not. Right, so thank you for that. It wields the dragon's power. In other words, it is satanic. It blasphemes, slandering God. 3.5 years pops up yet again. That's how long this beast is going to be allowed to last. That's how long it will make war with, it will take, well, when it makes war with the saints. Everyone will worship the beast except those in the book of life. And being in the book of life does not make you immune from suffering. If we get caught, we get caught. If we get executed, we get executed. There's no getting out of it. Then I saw another beast which rose out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb. Horn represents power. So it's got two powers. And it's like a lamb. So this idea of the counterfeit of everything that is God's keeps popping up. And it spoke like a dragon. So it looks like a lamb, but it speaks like Satan. It exercises all of the authority of the first beast in its presence, and the first beast we now know is Rome. And it makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. It works great signs, even making fire come down to heaven, coming down from heaven to earth in the sight of men. And by the signs which it's allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, bidding them make an image of the beast which was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast. Isn't that what God does? Didn't he breathe into Adam and he became a living being? So again, there's a counterfeit thing happening here. So the image of the beast should even speak, and to cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. So what's an image of an image? It's an icon. It's a statue. It's something which represents someone in a physical form, and it's got the power to speak and breathe. It also causes all, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let him who has understanding reckon the number of the beast, count the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666. Why does one beast rise from the sea and the other from the land? I don't know. If the first beast is something like Rome, then this second beast exercises something like Roman authority. And it makes everyone worship something like Rome. When is this going to happen? Or when did it happen? Or is this happening now? This second beast does some spectacular tricks, like making fire fall from heaven in plain sight. Does that remind anyone here of anything that they've seen? Star Wars? Modern War? You've seen the evening news. You know, there's the X on the building and there's the whack and the blast. Now, I'm not saying that the US is the beast, but it's not a bad fit. It makes everyone get a mark without which you cannot participate in the economy. Imagine that. What would you do? And if you were to name this beast, what would you name it today? Donald Trump. Right. No, it won't be Donald Trump. The war will be between Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, and Jeb Bush will win. So you're going to have the third generation of the Bushes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a fit as well. Absolutely. There was an icon, Hitler, and he spoke proud and blasphemous things. Who was the first guy who said, "Look out, Germany"? Who was it? Bonhoeffer. They pulled the plug on his radio broadcast when he was saying, "This is idolatry, and every nation that practices idolatry gets wiped out." And they pulled the plug on his broadcast as he was transmitting it. It was about 1933 or 6, round about then. And we know what happened to him. One of Hitler's last orders was to execute Bonhoeffer. So if you were to name it, what would you name it today? I think capitalism's not bad. Let's just say the system. And every now and then it morphs into something that really matches this. Yeah. Every now and then it pops up again. Yes, and I think, yes, it is popping up again in Australia, of all places. We've put people into concentration camps. We've done it. We've given them numbers instead of names. A boy called Yitzhak, who made his way across out of Afghanistan when he was 16, went through this horrendous experience, landed in Australia, and we put him in a concentration camp and gave him a number. We did that, people. Stop the boats. Right. Right. Does anything around you today fit this description? Remember, it has economic power. Finally, we're given a clue about the identity of this beast. We've already been given one about a head with a mortal wound. Now we're given another one. His name has something to do with the number 666. Both of these could point to Nero. Who was he? We're out of time, but we in the church have a memory of this man. He was the first leader of an empire to turn on Christians and to start killing them as fast as he could. The reason? Because he had set fire to Rome because he wanted to redesign it. And when the populace started to get angry at him, because he was popular, he was a singer. He was like someone on Greatest Idol. And he loved the popularity. He loved it. And then suddenly his people turn on him and said, "Was that you who burnt down a quarter of Rome?" And he thinks, no, it was them. It was the Christians. And that says a lot. Because that says in 65, when this happened, 65 AD, that the name Christian was known to the emperor. Anyway, if you take the Hebrew transliteration of Neron Kaiser, which is the Greek for Nero, Caesar Nero, and you add up the numbers of the letters, then you get 666. And if you do it in Latin, which is only Nero Kaiser, but do the same thing, use the Hebrew letters and the numbers that they represent and add them up, you get 616. And guess what? Most of our manuscripts have got 666, and some of them have got 616 at that point. So I think it's a pretty good match to Nero. So what's the point of all this? And here's the end you'll be glad to hear. I suppose that the point is that here is an unfolding revelation of Jesus Christ. Something has been set in motion and there's no stopping it. In the end, God, his Messiah and his people will prevail. God will reign on earth as well as in heaven. He will finally be given the glory by people. However, this will not take place without a great struggle. The pain will be horrendous. It'll be like the pain of childbirth. Many will die. A counterfeit kingdom will appear, perhaps something like Rome. It will have a counterfeit god, the dragon, a counterfeit Christ, the image of the beast, someone like the figure of Hitler or Nero, and a counterfeit seal. Remember, the people of God are sealed at the outset. But then this one's got a counterfeit seal, and it's a seal that stops you unless you've got it. Whereas the seal from God frees you unless you haven't got it. It's a counterfeit. The counterfeit kingdom will not last long, a mere 3.5 years. That's around about how long Nazi Germany lasted, by the way. However, given the economic exclusion, the woman and her offspring will be totally dependent on God for sustenance, just like Israel in the wilderness. And so that's the end. And that's the end of my 4 weeks on Revelation. And thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to expound on this difficult, encrypted book of the New Testament.